Hello and welcome to No Directions 2017 Gen Con Seminar Coverage. Special thanks to our Gen Con volunteers, Eric Bring the Knives and Andrew Mullins. For more seminars and other great Pathfinder content, visit NoDirectionPodcast.com.
Hi, everybody. Designing Aliens for Starfinder. We'll just do some introductions, and then I'll get into what we're going to be doing. Why don't you go tell them who you are, because they don't know.
They don't know?
I'm sure they don't
You're
know.
You're sure? Okay. So I'm Owen Casey Stevens, and I am the design lead for Starfinder.
And I'm Jason Keeley. I'm a developer who's done a lot of work on Starfinder, and especially the Alien Archive, which will be coming out in 2 months. And if you haven't been to the booth to see the preview copy where the you can get a good look at the cover, I suggest that you do that, because it is very pretty. And so what we're going to be doing here today is we're just going to... I have here, in the back of Alien Archive, we'll present to you this lovely set of appendices in which we detail how we create the monsters and other NPCs, such as, you know, just your normal big bad evil geniuses. And the way it is done is different than how you create a PC in Starfinder. Unlike in Pathfinder, where you basically sort of, if you wanted to create an NPC with levels, you would just build it like you'd build a PC. Now, creating just sort of monsters like new dragons or new other types of outsiders or whatnot in Pathfinder has a sort of kind of look at this chart, pick a hit die size, get it about here, you know.
The problem with the Pathfinder system is the Pathfinder system says, dragons have a D12 hit points, Fae have a D6 hit points. If you're going to be CR14, try and have this many hit points. Well, that means that if you're trying to make a CR14 creature, you say, okay, well, what kind of creature is it? All right, it's a dragon. Well, then it's a D12. Well, what should my con be? Well, apparently it should average 36. Okay, so it's a D12 on average to 36. Now I get some feats. I'll give it toughness. Oh, now I've got too many hit points, so I can't give it toughness. And so you have to go through these loops where you're trying to hit some target numbers with a whole bunch of different moving parts. And it can make... It's easy to say I want to make a 14 hit die dragon and see what CR it ends up. It's hard to say I want to make a CR14 dragon and have everything come together. So for Starfinder, we don't do that.
We've basically borrowed a lot from the Pathfinder Unchained system of monster creation, where you get a number of arrays. You pick sort of what you want your monster to do. Do you want it to fight? Do you want it to cast spells? That sort of thing. You look at these lists of numbers, pick the CR you want, and those are the numbers that your monster has. So, you know, it tells you how many hit points, what its armor classes should be, what its saves should be, how its skill rank, you know, what skill bonuses it has. And, you know, we sort of say, there's some you can have some tiny bit of wiggle room here, but this is essentially the numbers you need for the math to work out, for the game to be played. And then, frankly, monsters, they show up, for the most part, they get killed, and then they go away. So you don't need to spend so much time creating a monster that you're just going to, you know, throw at your players for this one session and not have to worry about it anymore.
The level of detail and granularity a player character needs, who most likely will be there for everything that happens, possibly over many, many levels of the game, and they want to customize it, and they're going to be constantly role-playing, and they're going to be in a whole bunch of different situations. That level of granularity is much finer than the level of granularity you need for Throg the Space Merc, who is going to kick down a door, come in gun blazing, and may not last two rounds. And when you're the game master and you're running the monsters and the GMs, you have absolutely no obligation to tell the players, oh, he has an energy armor class of 14. All they get to know is, I make an attack roll, do I hit, do I miss? So even if monsters have some similar sets of numbers and similar CRs, that doesn't mean they're all going to play out exactly the same way. And as he said, we tell you, hey, if you want to vary this up or vary this down by a little bit, here's how you do that. And there are different things like graphs and such that you can add that automatically do that some. But it actually has worked out very, very well in play that you can make a monster in 5 minutes at the correct CR that will be effective and useful and not take as long as making... And if you're doing first and second level CR monsters, maybe that's not a big deal. But when you're running a game and you want to create a custom CR16, CR17, CR22 creature, being able to do that in 5 minutes is a whole different ball of GMing wax.
Yes. So basically what we're going to do here is we're going to talk about monster concepts, get some ideas from you guys, try to maybe sort of create a monster from scratch. I've got the numbers all here so we can, at the end of this, maybe even have a playable monster. And I think what would be fun, since one of the sort of key tenets of Starfinder that we've been sort of going on is the cantina scene from Star Wars. All of those characters that you see, and even more other stranger characters, should be playable as character races. And so in Alien Archive, we've added a lot of interesting, different non-humanoid things that you can play if your GM lets you as a character, and has the sort of racial stats from basically like you'd find in here. So it might be fun to do that. To pick a concept that we work on to make it a new alien that is also possibly playable as a player character race. That sound good, Owen?
Sure.
Okay, good. All right, so I'm gonna be taking notes, and I'm gonna start with this piece of paper. I don't run too many of these seminars. I just like to sit quietly and make wise-ass remarks. It's a good place to begin. Let's talk about what kind of planet you might find this thing. So that way we can sort of get an idea of like, oh, is it big? Is it small? Does it have X number of arms? A whole bunch of eyes? Several tongues? Is it all tongues? Can it taste everything?
Can it taste time?
Can taste time. I can see through time.
And starting environmentally is really smart. One of the reasons that we wanted to make sure that making new creatures was easier and faster in Starfinder than it has been in some other similar games is that we want you to play in a galaxy. And as a GM, we want you to be free to set things in a broad galaxy. And yes, we're going to keep putting out books, but we are never going to cover a galaxy. It's just not practical, right? We look at the amount of space we've taken up just to talk about the world of Galarian and Pathfinder. We could go into that level of detail for every single planet just in the Pact Worlds. And the Pact Worlds is just one system in a bigger galaxy. So if you want to set an adventure on a world where there is no light and there is no sound, so it is constantly pitch black and it is constantly utterly silent, and therefore you want to have a whole ecology of scent and taste and touch-based creatures, you need to be able to make those yourself to do that, and we want you to be able to do that quickly. So, I mean, yes, I can taste everything, sounds silly, but there are some expectations we make about what everything will be like in Pathfinder that may not be true in Starfinder, because you might be in a world that's this ancient planet is a total silent spell, or these creatures live in a vacuum, so there is no touch is the only medium they have.
Snakes taste the air.
Yeah,
right, exactly. And borrowing from nature is another way that you can play with a whole lot of these things.
Yeah, borrow from nature and it like kind of just turn it up to 11 and then give it 5 of the same thing, and that then you've got to basically...
Always tentacles.
Tentacles are something of a trope.
Yeah. Also, just kind of want to just sort of point out sort of manage expectations ahead of time. This is most likely not something we're going to necessarily use in a future Best Year product or anything like that, so... But, you know, if it's super good,
might steal it. Are we using the one from PaizoCon, though?
No, not really. The art, and then I tweaked it.
Okay. So there's stuff we did at PaizoCon that we developed into something that will actually enter the game at some point.
It's actually the thing that came with it, the other thing that Remco sketched, the weird snake thing, that we didn't actually give stats for. We gave stats for that other sort of weird bug, flying bug thing. It was something that I was like, I don't really like this snake thing. I'm going to turn it into a monster.
What are the elements of a world?
What are the elements of a world? Part one. So we've got some basic size and gravity considerations and environment considerations. Let's talk about what kind of planet is it? Is it a solid planet? Is it a gas giant? Is it a tiny moon? Maybe we should even set this thing out on an airless asteroid.
Pretend we're doing improv. Throw up ideas.
Yes.
Gas giant asteroid.
How about an asteroid that is so low in a gas giant's orbit that occasionally it brushes by the atmosphere?
That sounds great. Asteroid. So this asteroid, does it normally does it have its own atmosphere, or is it completely airless and out to airless? Airless. Airless is always good.
Brushing by the atmosphere.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Or if there's a subterranean atmosphere and they can only come to the surface when it's brushing by the atmosphere.
Pockets of the atmosphere when they push by.
Yeah, all right, so by the way, this is incredibly cool. We now have an asteroid that has a hollow space that has its own atmosphere. Mm-hmm. The creatures live in that atmosphere, but when it brushes by the atmosphere, they can leave the asteroid and move to the gas giant's
atmosphere. Or move to other patches inside.
Or move to other patches. Right. No, see, that's...
That's maybe the creatures live in the gas giant. It's like the asteroid just comes by periodically and like maybe it incubates their young or something.
Yeah, maybe they have to go there to spawn, like salmon going upstream.
To the gas giants to spawn? Or
I actually
think
they go to the asteroid to spawn.
Okay.
Yeah, like the asteroid
spawning
point is so consistent that they were able to evolve with it.
I mean, imagine, for example, if they always fly, but if they're going to lay eggs, they have to have a solid piece of rock, so they're always in motion of the gas giant, but they have to go to the asteroid in order to lay eggs, because otherwise the eggs will just fall forever. Yes, sir.
Point of order, yeah. I don't want to be this guy, but if it has a consistent and stable orbit, it's not an asteroid, it's a moon.
I thought you said you didn't want to be that guy.
Wait, why don't I have these comments?
But well, but maybe this, maybe the asteroid does not just orbit this planet. Maybe it goes off in some sort of planetary stable orbit, or maybe it is an asteroid because there's a giant sign that says Wizard X said this was an asteroid.
But if you want to get into the detailed history of this thing, maybe it was an asteroid belt and then it got like, caught up and then it became a moon.
But because that it brushes past other planets, maybe that's what creates the conditions for eggs to hatch.
I think that's actually a really insane idea.
The other thing about that is that it could be, right, that there's a perfectly safe planet, except that when this wandering asteroid brings the eggs from the moon breather, then they hatch and they go down there. Maybe each stage of its life cycle is on a different planet. They're born in the asteroid, then they've got a larval stage on one planet, but then they have to hop a ride next time and move on to the gas giant.
So a very long, possibly a very long-lived species.
Right.
We actually did something fairly...
yes, Planet Uber, absolutely.
We did a little something. We're about to do something similar, I think, in AP number 3, where we actually have two stat blocks that are the same creature at different points in its life cycle. So that's something that is definitely cool and able to do. And we'll probably only get to one of them, so we'll figure out which part of. Let's talk about that. Let's. What part of its life cycle do we want to eventually stat up here?
Let's go with larva or juvenile.
Juvenile.
So right after it hatches.
Right after it hatches. So it's on a... Well, at this point, it may be on a different planet than this gas giant, but it's got sort of this gas giant's background, this evolution. So we're talking about this gas giant, and that sort of basically hints that this thing in its full adult stage is constantly flying.
Yep.
So it is a winged creature of some kind. But in its juvenile stage, is it a winged creature? It doesn't have to be.
Well, I'm thinking that since they're coming from a gas giant, maybe these are kind of like microcosmic suns. So in the larval stage, they're like nebulae. And so they're just like...
So they're a swirling gas ball that eventually compresses into a little fusion reactor?
Oh, boy. Okay.
A centipede and a butterfly, perhaps.
As sort of the pull from nature.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so we are going to do the larval micronebula stage.
Larval micronebula.
So we went weird.
Okay, so that's what happens.
Well, so here's the thing. You guys could have said, let's do goblins. And we could have done goblins. And we've got space goblins with bubble helmets and band-aids. But if you're going to do anything fairly standard, A, you don't need a panel with 50 people sitting around pitching ideas for that. You can come out there yourself. B, we've got a lot of basic stuff in the game, right? If we say, hey, here are the stats for an orc, and you decide, well, I want a brutish Morlock humanoid species, you can just say, hey, I'm going to take my orcs, and instead of green, they're puce, and move on. One of the advantages of this system is if you sit around and you go, what if there are creatures that are born as a solid, turn into a gas when they are in their larval stage, and then eventually turn into small fusion reactors that are sentient burning globes of light? That requires you to come up with some new stats. And so that's a great way, because we haven't done one of those, and we will have by tomorrow, but we haven't done one of those yet. So that is a great way to showcase some of the advantages of the system.
And in a certain way, this is a little bit like a solar version of a will-o-wisp, but in a wider cosmic kind of life cycle. What do you got there?
So I would say when they get to the second planetoid, they are basically hunting for resources to create their own, reaction, whatever is going to cause them.
They need to suck up mass.
They suck up mass. So for this to sort of work, we got to think about this second planet where it's on its larval stage. Shout it something out.
I mean, it's got to be filled with matter. Maybe
it's got to have matter on it. Great, so we've got that. We've got it. We're done. Matter.
So, because our most gas giants mostly methane and things.
Toxic gases.
So what if the second planet's life cycle is in a jungle type situation? There's a lot of decomposing and rotting things where these things go in and chow down and eat a lot of rotting whatever.
The other nice thing about that is that putting it on a jungle world, that's a place where player characters are more likely to face it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, you can perfectly well set things on worlds where people aren't likely to go. We have things on Eox, and why on Earth would you go there?
Why on Eox?
Well, sure, but my point is that if we have this life cycle and it's going to go to a second planet, having that other planet be a place where there are going to be things that you might be able to have a conversation with is a great way to introduce this into a campaign.
Is it intelligent or is it just kind of hunting? Just kind of like got an animal style intelligence.
How does it get from the asteroid to the jungle planet?
Launches itself from balls.
So this asteroid does a sort of a pass through. You don't want it to fully burn up and become a meteorite. So it's got to pass just outside the atmosphere. And there is something in this. Let's say there's something in some special thing in the atmosphere, a special gas that this thing is attracted to. So it just kind of pops out.
It heats up because it's going through the atmosphere.
It heats up, and that gives it its sort of a trigger. To just sort of,
it doesn't have a big mass anyway.
Yeah, and it just kind of floats on down like a, and then this process of it entering the atmosphere heats it up, right? As you guys were saying, and essentially, I mean, that's the hatching.
Yeah, that's the hatching.
Yeah, you've already probably. I gotta get there on my own.
Also, assuming that they glow while they do that, that means that as a GM, you get to describe to the players one day, hey, there's a pretty meteor shower with a bunch of greens and yellows and just falling down on the far. Well, and that's they find that out a couple days later when a small nebula tries to eat their face.
Okay.
do these things live like? So they would have to eventually get back onto the asteroid to go back to the gas planet.
Yep.
So this asteroid's only going to be close to this planet for like a week at most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my assumption is that it goes by and they drop off. They gather up all the mass they can, and as they start to gain some sentience, they have an urge to get back up there. So the next time it comes through, be that months or years
so that
later.
That means that whatever their nutrition is, that planet's not going to have any of it once they die. Because they're going to be going, unless it replenishes it, quickly, or that planet has it.
Well, if it's a jungle planet, it's teeming with life, and all stuff is constantly dying.
Yeah.
And I think, that meteor shower aspect is also not only the hatching; it's a trigger for years or so, months or so later. Oh, they see that in their brain. They go, "Oh, it's
the
time to get back on the
landed
ones
last time. Go back up.
Get back up into the asteroid." So they set a switch off.
I think a 7-year cycle sounds
good. 7-year cycle. That's classic.
Cycle.
Maybe the jungle planet's atmosphere was spawned from the asteroid, bringing atmosphere to it.
Maybe
this whole planet is almost sort of a giant supermarket. That was built sort of by chance by this asteroid passing through it,
so
dropping some other. Yeah.
Maybe the race is so advanced that they've manufactured these planets for their young.
But chicken or egg, basically, is the question at that point.
And to a certain extent, it doesn't matter because that's the next life cycle, which
let's start getting into the nitty gritty here. CR.
5.
I think 2 because they're going to be swarming. So there's going to be.
We might have a swarm thing.
Well, how many are there?
It's a good question.
Yeah, that's a bad question.
Asteroids full.
One asteroid full. That is a good amount.
So an asteroid load.
An asteroid load.
I think we could offer 2 variants, one where it's by itself and then one where they swarm together because they kind of collectively form this mass.
Okay.
And that's
so
how they grow.
I can easily see saying here's the swarm version and here's the individual version after they build up a little bit. Let's do an individual CR5 because otherwise we go diving down into the swarm rules and we've got them, but that's a subset.
I know, I'm just saying.
Maybe like there's a version where it just gets there.
All right, so we are going to do a CR5 version that is at a stage where they've broken up enough, they've absorbed enough that they are moving around on their own.
Yes. And then we get fully to continue on to the nitty-gritty when we get into the charts. We pick what this thing, sort of this general role is. Is it a combatant? Is it a spellcaster, meaning that it uses spells? Not to say that a combatant couldn't have magical abilities, or is it basically what is known as an expert, meaning it's good at skills?
I think
like
a vampiric touch kind of ability.
Yeah.
Like a hungry fog.
Like a what?
Like a hungry fog.
A hungry fog monster.
So, the core.
Strike a sword is that sure it could tumble into because it's just sitting there.
Yeah, I mean that's what makes it so better. Right. It's like a video game boss. It's a big glowing red dot in the middle.
Shoot here.
Alright, so
if it eats the gases coming off of decomposing matter, would their primary motivation for attacking the party be to turn them into something that decomposes?
Generally, yeah. Or they interrupted its feeding, and so it turns around and goes, wah!
Perhaps it's just easier to take decaying matter because they don't move. So yeah. Maybe they can feed off them.
I think they need to be able to move a little bit because they're moving around.
What if it has a paralyzing touch for organic creatures? And then the creature stays there
and it can just jump on it.
So,
yeah.
Right, a lot of these are good ideas, but yes. We're actually getting ahead of ourselves.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
So
we're basically...
It sounds like, however, we want them to, when interacting with the player characters, fight them, whether that's special abilities or whatever, right. And that sounds like a combatant role.
Yes.
If we had wanted them to baffle and bamboozle them or charm them or transmute them into puppies, that would be more a spellcaster thing. And if we wanted them to really be about...
like, say, stealth or something.
Right, if they were stealth-focused or their fonts of knowledge or whatever.
Somehow I don't think the giant ball of glowing light is going to be very stealthy.
Well, it could be stealth-based if it creates a cloud, so no one can see it. But
man, the sun is really low in the sky today.
Ow!
Oh, shit, that's a lot closer.
But, so I think we can safely say that we want to go with a CR5 combatant role.
Combatant, no. Cool.
So
that's going to basically give us a whole bunch of numbers here. It's armor class, it's fort, it's hit points. It's going to have now, we've got 70 hit points. It's got an EAC of 17 and a KAC of 19, et cetera, et cetera. So those are sort of numbers we fill into the thing. But before we get fully into writing those down, we also kind of figure out what kind of... we have the same type of creature types as in Pathfinder. And I don't know if I actually need to ask this because all the things you've been saying kind of makes me think that this is an aberration of sorts. It's not human.
Actually, I would argue it's an elemental.
Well, that may make it an outsider.
Okay. It could be a native outsider, like
a Rakshasa.
I think a portal to either plane. I mean, since it travels from planet to planet,
I mean, yeah, native outsider doesn't necessarily mean native to a single planet, too. It just means native to the material plane.
Right.
No, that's cool. We haven't done one of those.
Because I think a native outsider elemental that is a moving nebula that becomes a living microsun.
It's the elemental form of essentially planets.
Could I just sort of throw this out here? Ooze, though?
Yeah, it doesn't sound oozy,
okay.
Right?
Let's do outsider. What size is it? Medium now at this point? Or is
large,
it small?
Large, small, medium?
I think every time it feeds, it should actually just get larger. So start at small, and then get bigger.
So at its larval stage, it's small, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
But since we already decided that it had a swarm stage, let's go with medium here.
Yeah, medium.
So that before this, there was a swarm stage where they were like, yeah, okay.
Smaller, and now they're medium.
Yeah, this is now medium.
The opposite, where it's youngest stage is large, but as it gets more energy, it condenses itself.
Yeah, that's actually not a terrible idea, since we're talking about them slowly compressing themselves into a sun.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe they're large at this stage, and they'll be medium when they're more dangerous, and then they'll be small just before they light up.
So they don't. Maybe they don't swarm at those early levels anyway, because you don't have a swarm of huge creatures, which isn't a swarm anymore, it's a troop.
But I like them being large and getting smaller. I think that's...
Yeah. Okay.
I think reversing the cycle is a neat idea.
Should we start with huge, then?
We can.
At this, at tier 5?
Yeah, because it doesn't affect anything.
No, I know, I'm just saying, this is the huge, this is where we're starting, larval.
Yeah, no, I say, let's do a CR5 huge native outsider ball of gas.
They actually could be outsiders, but they could be outsiders from the point of positive energy if they're made sun.
Well, so they might have a tie to that, but if they're from the plane of energy, then they probably aren't spawning and moving about on our various planets. So,
they're ascendants into the positive energy plane.
That's possible.
Do we want to give them the fire subtype?
Not at this stage?
Yeah, I would actually give them the air subtype at this stage.
A space carrying creature would probably not be fire or air.
And then,
well, we do not make a distinction between the nuclear fire of the fusion of a sun and a flamethrower that requires some oxygen.
So there isn't like a radiation subtype?
No, we do not. There may be someday, but at the moment we do not have a radiation.
Basically,
the outsider,
we basically sort of picked this, and from here on out, we're sort of adding what we call grafts. You'll recognize that from the Pathfinder Unchained, and each some of these grafts will basically sort of alter the stats in little ways. And we can see here that an outsider makes sure that it has definitely dark vision, 60 feet. And we say if it's a specific thing like an angel or devil, it has to have an alignment or a subtype or an elemental a subtype. Do we want to actually give it the elemental subtype?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll do that too. To match its race, and then we say +2 to one type of saving throw, +1 to attack rolls. Hooray! Right now we've got a +7 fort, a +7 reflex, and a +4 will. That +2, I would. Oh, it's big, though. Do you want to give it reflex, or is it fortitude, because it's so huge?
I think for the size huge, I think giving it a really good fortitude save makes sense. It's just hard to get enough of any effect that affects its system into it.
So we'll put that +2 into fort, and we'll say attacks +1. And then moving on to sort of like those subtypes also are graphs, and they sometimes give them things. But then, though, the native subtype doesn't do anything that rules-wise. It's just there for interacting with other things.
It's a keyword, basically.
It's a good keyword. But air will give it a supernatural fly speed with perfect maneuverability. I think that's good.
That works for what we're doing.
And we have acrobatics as one of its better skills. Yes, in the purple there.
Just a weird question.
Yeah.
Since it's a being that changes from its larval stage to its juvenile and adult stage, can it actually change subtypes, or would it just be one subtype?
I think it could change subtypes as it goes along,
One of the nice things about the way that we're writing this up, and it sounds to me like we would have, if we were doing this in a stat block, we'd have three stat blocks. We'd have the first arrival stat block system, maybe, or maybe this is it, but that's where it is this kind of creature. And then it becomes a somewhat different kind of creature with its own stat block when it's ready to go back to its asteroid spawning ground. And then maybe a final version when it gains full sentience when it gets back to its original home world. And while we would probably want them to all be native outsiders, because you don't go from being a giant to being an aberration, though you could, now that you say that.
In Alien Archive, we have these creatures called Skittermanders, and they're on the cover. They're Skittle-colored guys. They have two stages. They have a sort of a larval stage. I wanted the larval stage to sort of be an animal, and then it turned into a humanoid. But the art that came by could have made them both look humanoid, so it kind of made them both humanoid.
The other potential problem with that is that if it's going to become a humanoid, and you don't necessarily want it to be affected by things that affect animals, like pet taming, because then...
Right.
But in this case, I think it makes sense for it to be a native outsider throughout. But it could easily be an air outsider, and then maybe it actually, when it is incredibly dense and small but has not yet burst into flames, maybe at that point we would say it's an earth outsider. And then at its last stage, it finally makes that last little crunch and becomes a fire outsider. We can totally do that.
Yeah.
We're only going to focus on the size, huge, air, elemental, native outsider at the moment. But those would be a series of possibilities.
And then they can turn into tiny black holes.
And then
they
burst into a supernova. Yeah. So, and then we also have given it the elemental subtype, which gives it the same elemental immunities. We're cool with that. It's going to be, basically you can't I forget what this. They're basically the same. I actually can't quite remember now.
But since it's a living ball of gas, I think it having elemental immunities makes sense.
Yeah, you can't make it bleed. You can't critically hit it. You can't flank it. You can't poison it.
Can you not critically hit it at all, or is it just not critical
effects?
It's just
critical hit, but I think we said specifically what that means in immunities.
Okay. All right.
So we give that specifics. Terrific. We've moved on. That was step three. Step four is class graph step. I don't think this guy's going to have a class graph. That's mainly for your humanoids and other things that might have.
Last one is a Solarian, but not.
I mean,
well, that doesn't mean we can't give it a little bit of Solarian flavor in here, because we have ways to do that.
And we'll get to that now. But the main point is that if we decided that it was a sentient flaming ball of gas, some of those are mystics. We could take the mystic graph, which would give it the appropriate powers for a mystic of its CR. One of the advantages of this system is, one of the current problems we have, if I've got a frost giant in Pathfinder. Great, he's a frost giant. Awesome. I want my frost giant to be a cleric. Well, if he's going to hang out with the other frost giants, he's going to be like a second level cleric, or maybe a fourth level cleric. And all those cleric abilities are utterly useless for the CR of the, even with the you know, every two levels adds one CR, it still doesn't make him an effective cleric. With the graft, we say, okay, you're a CR-14 cleric type. For this frost giant, instead of giving him the combat array, which is what all the soldiers have, we give him a spellcasting array. Then we give him, in our case, it would be the mystic graft, and then he gets an appropriate series of mystic powers for his CR. So it becomes much, much easier to have, here's our warrior type, here's our shaman type, here's our trap maker. Mm-hmm. And they still have the same racial abilities, but you don't end up with a problem that all frost giants are effectively 14 levels of barbarian, and then you get to add two or three levels of something else.
They might be recognizable to your players, the similar abilities they have, but they're not always all the same, and they don't get everything a player gets.
Right. To keep them simple enough that you can run them, because
super fast.
A GM has to take care of everything, and a player has to take care of one thing.
I should note this is a 9-step process. We're already on step 5, and we're probably going to skip that step. Because that is a template graph. And that's the sort of thing where if we wanted to transform this in some fashion, for some reason we built this, and then we said, oh, now it's undead. Let's give it the zombie template graph. Well, now it's a zombie. But we're not going to do that. But that is another sort of thing. We've added some simple template graphs in the back of here if we wanted to say this
is. Do you have them printed out?
I have them all printed out. It has two heads.
Are any of the simple template graphs appropriate?
That'd be a good variant. Maybe two nuclei.
Yeah, exactly. That's astral. I mean, we don't. It's already.
We don't need aerial because it's already an air creature. Astral, not celestial.
Shadowy, but that's often that. Frantic, but mind element positive.
What is that one?
Resolute. That's basically law.
Okay.
Law outsiders, basically. That's the opposite of anarchic.
Okay.
So these are good for things that aren't maybe not already outsiders.
We could make it psychic and give it the Frenic.
Do we want to make it psychic?
Now, yes.
All right, wait, hold on. Raise your hand if you want it to be psychic.
Let's let them know what that would mean.
Okay.
If you give it this is a fairly simple template. So it basically only gets +2 to will saves and then limited telepathy, and that's it.
But it's not intelligent.
So maybe it picks that up later when it's
right.
Sentient and sapient.
Once it is CR7 or higher, it gets blind sense emotion with a range of.
It's a hunter.
Right. Okay.
So I don't think we need any of those.
But we could have added those things again to tweak and like constructed as one so that you can turn it into an android and celestial so it's native to the good planes, etc.
But a telepathic sense, it's only sense.
Right.
That's how it crafts prey by sensing mind.
And we can still add that outside of giving it the Frenic template, which would also give it to the telepathy. So that's a legitimate point, and we'll get there.
Indeed. Because we are on step 6, which is special ability. And this is most likely the meatiest of the steps. Because this is where you might make something up new, or you might just give it a couple of universal creature rules, or give it a couple of weird senses and whatnot. Yes, you have a question.
Definitely.
We're thinking that. So on the array chart, it basically gives you how many special abilities you need. You should give it to be about appropriate. And for a CR5 combatant, that's 2. Now, some special abilities, such as dark vision, are essentially free. But I think it's got dark vision being an outsider.
Yeah, it has dark vision automatically.
Let's write that down. Dark vision, 60 feet. But stuff like that, that's why a lot of these templates give you these things, these graphs, I should say, give you these things, so they don't count against your... Because you don't get a ton of them here in these mid-range levels. Let's take a look. Oh, that's summoning. We don't want that now. All of the special... We sort of give you a sort of general idea of what special abilities are. There are some, like... You say you can give it a universal creature rule, which we have a list in the back of the book. You can just give it something that's super simple, like it has 20% more hit points. Or you can make some new ones up. Feats are where this sort of happen here, because normally we don't give them X number of feats. Most likely those feats are stat changes in some fashion, such as like a weapon focus or something like that. Occasionally those are things that a monster needs to do to do something, and that's when we'd write it down. But if a lot of stat blocks you'll find don't have the feats line, so you don't have to worry about it having If it had improved initiative, we just added +4 to its initiative.
We don't need to worry about improved initiative or sprint or run or iron will or any of that stuff.
No, but you can basically sort of like giving it sort of, if you wanted to give it spell-like abilities, specific ones, or if you wanted to give it sort of, it's an adjustment special ability, we call it secondary magic. It's not a normally spellcaster, but you can give it some spellcasting abilities, and we tell you, look at this chart, and it should be this level, and how many this day.
Yeah.
So, we're talking about, we were talking about senses. Blind sense scent is free for us, so let's give it that. So, you know, yes.
So how about the ability to pull things into itself? I mean, it's trying to collect other matter, so...
Yep.
Let's do a quick brainstorm of fun special abilities it could have. So it could have some sort of gravity pull, semi-similar to maybe something the Solarian has.
Paralyzing.
Yes, paralyzing, so it can eat you. Something. Oh, it's huge.
Swallow hole was suggested.
Swallow hole. You had a...
Well, I like the paralyzing one, but like because it has a gas aura of some sort, that could be a lot of things.
Indeed. Maybe that's part of its aura.
Like all the level 1, 2, 3, 4 gas cloud spells.
Yeah, obscuring mist or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Constant, yeah. Obscuring mist of will. Or constant, yeah. Stinking cloud.
Cloud overall chemical stuff.
Yeah,
maybe a solar flare. I mean, it's all of light, so maybe it can do like a discharge of light to blind attackers.
That'd be like a last resort.
It would be probably
like
eyes.
Yeah, just like.
Oh, yeah.
There.
So, suggestion for this would be an engulf ability?
We've got swallow hole, basically. Sort of similar.
Are drawbacks also included in this?
So drawbacks are something you can give it. You kind of say, give it as much drawbacks as you want to give it. If you give it a bunch of drawbacks, maybe give it an extra special ability so it's not weakened. So they're essentially free. Did you have a drawback in mind as well?
So easily subject to wind-based attacks. You can just sort of blow it away.
Yeah. I thought the same thing.
Gust of wind just makes it go.
That's okay.
Over here, you.
Just because it's like large and not really like condensed yet.
We've given it sort of elemental ability, so it's hard to bleed, elemental immunity, right. I should say. Hard to basically do the critical effects. I think it's immune to the damage, but you can maybe still do the effects.
You can't really stab.
Okay.
Yeah. You can't flank it for sure. Yes?
Going with drawbacks again, maybe it has limited reach, so you really have to emphasize
zero.
Yeah, that's what occupied space.
Certainly.
Because it's so huge.
Yeah. You have another one?
So, kind of a drawback and a positive at the same time. The core, if you strike the core, it disperses. But the core is already so dense that it has either DR or a hardness. Maybe like hardness. I don't know what would be a good hardness.
Normally, for a creature, we would. If it's not a construct, we'd normally give it DR.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then DR 10 something. Adamantium.
The amount of DR is also going to be very much dependent on the level, because if we give a level 5 creature DR 10,
yeah.
Then players hate us.
Yeah.
Because it just takes forever to grind through that thing.
Probably 5 if we're going to give it anything. Okay, that's a good amount. So we've got to pick 2 out of these.
Or give enough drawbacks
that we can get 3.
Now, I like the ability to be blown away.
Okay.
And then the core.
So that's a question of... So the way it works, monsters don't have stamina, so we can't really play with that sort of like, once it starts taking hit point damage or stamina damage, it takes more or something like that. So we can't really play with that, unfortunately. But is there any way we can sort of say like,
well, I mean,
its core is more vulnerable to something?
I mean, we could, for example, give it the vulnerability that swarms have, that area attacks do 1.5 times damage.
I like that.
Because they're dispersing it.
Yeah. Were you about to say something like that?
I was just to make it maybe if it's especially if it's huge and does damage to you while you're standing inside it, maybe being adjacent to its center square lets you do extra damage to it. But to do that, you have to be standing inside.
Oh, I like that.
We'd have to add in some. So you,
well,
we don't normally do a whole lot of.
If we give it swallow hole,
right? You'd be
it can be vulnerable to attacks from
while it's swallowed
some,
whole.
While
okay.
It has swallowed you whole.
Oh boy, that's interesting.
And then we can also tack on, right, if you cast Gust of Wind, whatever our telekinetic blow spells are, we can just make a list of them and say these do like 1d6 per spell level or something.
Okay, yeah. All right,
I just want to clarify. So its tactic is it pulls things in, tries to pull it inside of itself, and then either paralyzes it or just decomposes it until it turns into methane.
Something. I think we're honing in on something like that.
Okay.
Yes.
Something a little different. When you have done damage and it's about to die, as it dies, it discharges its core energy in some kind of burst effect. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can go kill it, but you're going to pay for it.
And you need to do the most damage. You need to be in there anyway, and that's when you're going to take the thing. So I like this sort of death, this death explosion.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've got, let's say, we're going to give it gravity pull. We're going to give it swallow whole. Do you think this sort of death ability sort of, we should... Count. This counts as a special ability, even though it's done. It's the last thing it does to you. Does something, blinds you for.
Yeah, no, I think
minutes.
That counts.
Okay, so we're going to do that sort of death nail kind of explosion.
Another possibility is since it dies and bursts, there's an awful lot of gases floating around here, and some of its fellows, it might attract others of its kind.
That seems like it's almost. Like that's almost like it's ecology, right?
More than it is a special. We would describe that in the running text rather than give it as a special power, right? When one dies, the vapors coming off it attract it, because we've already given it scent, so it can already smell when its allies die.
Yeah,
I know how it feels.
If it has a kind of discharge of energy, then it'll leave behind some kind of physical matter, or perhaps like some kind of like. Core or treasure?
Yeah. Right, again, that's not a special ability, but it's something we'd write up. And
right.
That's why you'd want to go hunt it, because it's got... Yeah. Oh, now I've got a diamond the size of my head.
Solarium.
A sword.
Let's take a moment, we can keep coming up with cool ideas for this forever, but at some point we have to drill down.
We've got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, and actually get this finished, so let's try
and
do that.
We're pretty close to finish, because we're going to pick Gravity Pull, we're going to do Swallow Hole, we're going to do this Death Knell, we're going to give it a vulnerability to these wind-based attacks and area attacks, and we're basically only going to give it a 5-foot reach, even though it has got a 30-foot whatever. Real quick.
You said vulnerability to wind. Does wind actually do damage, or is it just dispersing?
I think for the wind-based spells, we'll do a thing, and I'm not 100% sure how many of those are at the moment.
We would just list these spells that are the... If these spells do, if you use this spell in its area, you actually do 1d6 damage per level of the spell. We'd do something like that.
Right, it doesn't get...
And that's not a huge vulnerability by itself, but we're adding it to the 1.5 times from area effect. So the two of those together means if someone is attacked with this huge ball of gas and they go... I have this hurricane spell. I'll try that. Ooh, that was super effective.
Yeah.
Then that's included.
Okay. And then we'd, make sure to write those up and give the DCs for any of these abilities we would have in here or would be listed in the array, that sort of thing. And then we move on to sort of a slightly easier thing. So skills-wise, CR5 combatant has one master skill, meaning its highest skill bonus, and two good skills. Perception is sort of free at its good... A good rating, which is plus 11, and then the master is plus 16. I think we have also, because it is of the air subtype, it gains acrobatics as a master or good skill on top of that. And so, I think let's give it as a master skill,
because
it's got a perfect maneuverability. So it's going to have acrobatics at plus 16. It needs another plus 16 type deal.
Let's look at the skills.
Oh, let's look at the skills.
Survival
is always pretty good. That's good for predicting the weather and tracking things by its sense. And it needs a...
It's gonna get that for the size.
That's true.
Nope. There are no penalties to stealth for your size.
No, because
if giants try and play hide-and-go-seek, they can't because they take penalties to their stealth but not to their perception checks. So children frost giants can't play hide-and-go-seek. They can't hide from each other.
All right, we need two two good spells, at plus 11. Our skill list is a lot shorter than a Pathfinder, so we've got athletics. We're probably going to ignore things like computers and engineering. We'll probably ignore that. Sheesh.
So I would be inclined to give it, sense motive.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because it's a giant ball of cloud, and it's got this scent and this sense of the world around it. So, if you try and faint it, it's difficult to bluff.
Do we want to give it a stealth of plus 11? Is it sneaky-ish?
It's huge, but it is a ball of gas.
Yeah.
It's a glowing core.
Right. The glowing core can be muted by its own gas cloud.
It's if you see a lighthouse through it, a cloud of fog.
Right.
Yeah, it can be difficult to sound.
Let's give it stealth plus 11. Not too shabby.
Identify
what matter does it consume?
Yeah.
Knowledge, life science.
Yeah, so it would be like, that is something I would...
Well, so, I mean, we don't give wolves knowledge life sciences in order to know not to eat things that aren't food for them.
Yeah.
So that's just sort of
instinctual.
Assumed.
Yeah.
If we gave it knowledge life sciences, then it would go wandering up, and even though we're giving it an animal int, it would go, this appears to be from class Canidae, and that's just more information than we need for this. what's our next step?
Spells, but we're skipping that because it doesn't have any.
Right.
And then step 9 is final check, where I know you check all the math and make sure you didn't give it too many special abilities. And skills is sort of a flexible. If you want to give it an extra skill or two, that's not going to break the game. But I think the most important thing that we need to do right now before we leave is to name this thing. We can go the sort of Latin-y type route. Yes, let's go.
Two suggestions.
Yeah.
Since it's feeding primarily off of dead matter, we could go with like Necronule or Nuclid.
We can't use Necro because according to our creative lead, we have used our total allotment of the word Necro on Eox.
What was that second one? Nuclid. Nuclei, but yeah.
A nuclei.
Okay, that's cool.
How about Solar Wisp? I mean, we're talking about it's kind of like a Will of the Wisp.
Right. Solar Wisp is pretty cool.
Solar Wisp,
Something nebulous.
Good. Nebulous something.
Call it Dark Cloud.
Yeah.
Damn,
along the lines of Elmo's Fire. I would see it igniting in the atmosphere of its gas giant when it finally returned home.
We don't have any good saints.
Well,
we'd have to make one up.
We could call it Desna's Fire.
Desna's Fire might be something that might be something that I see that as something it being called that by like.
I'm for Solar Wisp.
Well, because it wouldn't even cause lights, would it?
So let's get one more suggestion here.
No, I'm just thinking of this as where it would fit in the mythos of a culture on this planet.
Right, yeah, the jungle planet might have other inhabitants, right?
Yeah. And how that would fit into that, and how you
What's that? Is it time? It's time. All right, quickly. We're going to call it a solar wisp. Sound good, everyone?
Yeah,
you love it. Okay, solar wisp. Thank you so much. That's pretty darn interesting. So, I don't know. If you have any books, we can sign some books real quick. Otherwise, thanks for coming. Have a good rest of your con, everybody. And look for Alien Archive coming out October.